Let me tell you a bit about what Alice and I do. First of all, we're responsible for 6 countries in East Africa. Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda. In all 3 of those, you can speak English. But well, in Tanzania, it would be helpful if you, long-term, if you could speak Swahili, but to go on a short-term basis, you could manage in Tanzania in English. But then the other 3 countries that we're responsible for are Rwanda, Burundi, and the Congo. And Alice just came back from Rwanda. She took a Kenyan girl there in Butare at the University, the National University. It is helpful there if you parlez-vous français. How many of you in here parlez-vous?
Right.
I may chain both of your legs to the tree and take you with me. I am looking for English speakers. Really, I am looking for
French.
Sorry. I'll be all right. I'm looking for French speakers,
yeah.
Particularly for one country. 2 hairy-legged, steel-backed, mean-boned men who can speak French and who love God and who have a strong stomach to go to the Congo and work on Kinshasa University campus. There are 40,000 students there, and they live
in poverty.
In a rat hole. They do. It's the pits. It's the pits. But I'm telling you, ladies and men, those guys are ready to hear the gospel. They want to follow Jesus. How can they hear without a messenger? And I'm telling you, I've been on that campus, and the only signs of spiritual life that I've found there are chaplains sitting in offices waiting for students to come to see them. That's biblical, isn't it? No, it isn't. You know, he didn't say, you know, make sure you go and get everybody to go to the church house. Is that what he said? No. Or go visit chaplains. No. He talked about you and me sharing the gospel. All right, there's the Congo. I really am a little reluctant right now to even take my wife to the Congo. So that's why I'm not asking ladies to consider that.
But what I wanted to say is that unlike what we have heard from the speaker we just heard, and we've heard him before, he is from the part of the country we're from.
Don't tell him more than
that. Yeah, I'm not. But there it is so difficult, as you heard. And some of us need to go where it's very difficult. But in Kinshasa, even though it's very difficult, hard, physical circumstances, it is not that hard to share the gospel. So we meet people in all areas of the world where there is persecution, like he was talking about. But the good thing about East Africa is that there is not persecution. We have some Muslims and some situations around that we have to be careful about, but there is freedom to speak to students and to visit them and to sing in the dorm rooms and that sort of thing. So there is that difference that I wanted to share with you, that you wouldn't be threatened to be sent to jail, except that Alan might tell you an experience that he just had in the Congo where he was arrested.
Yes. Yeah. Nice guy. What happened was, a number of us went to the Congo to try to get permission to do ministry on campus. And after I wandered around most of the day with some French speakers helping me we finally found the right place, and they agreed that we could come and do ministry on campus. So I sent all the other missionaries away and kept a journeyman with me from Baylor University who speaks French. And I told those guys, listen, don't worry about us. We'll get a taxi. It's a thing they call a taxi. It's an automobile that has been put together from the remains of a half a dozen other automobiles. There is no starter. They just tie the wires together. You know, the country is in terrible condition.
They park it on the hill so they can get it started.
That's right. We were out all day interviewing students, trying to find out what the spiritual climate was like on campus. And it's pretty warm in certain seasons of the year in the Congo, and we have been working at this for 4 or 5 hours. So Michael Hamline, the journeyman from Baylor, I said, hey, Mike, man, I've had the course. Let's go and see if we can find us a Coca-Cola. It's highly unlikely, but maybe we can stumble on one somewhere. So we went up to we walked a half a mile up to the gate, and, you know, we found a guy that was selling Coca-Colas, and it was even cold. My goodness. A surprise, and we were drinking our Coca-Colas, and while we were just standing there. Now, I must confess, there are 40,000 students on that campus, and they are all darker than me. So we were standing, you know, we added color to the surroundings, and while we were standing there, this man walked by me and began to talk to Michael in French. And Michael turned to me with a funny look on his face and said, Mr. Stickney, this guy is a policeman, and he demands that we follow him to the police station. I said, man, I'm pretty harmless. I mean, white guy drinking a Coca-Cola? I mean, what have I done? He said, it doesn't do any good. We've got to follow him. So he marched us into the police station and down the hallways into the police chief's office. And the police chief was bigger than Dikembe Mutombo. You know Dikembe, who plays for NBA? He's Congolese, by the way. His poster is everywhere in Kinshasa. This guy was a monster. He was sitting behind this huge desk. And he was not a happy camper, you know him. He has that bad look on his face. And I tell him bonjour, and then he communicates, and then I have to tell him no parler vous français. And I sat down while he and Michael are communicating. By the way, I noticed Michael when he started talking, the words were not coming out. He was scared to death. And, of course, I put on a good act. I pretended like I was not frightened. I was thinking, Lord, get me out of here. And finally, while he and Michael were talking on this huge desk, I could see a small book right in the middle of the desk. It's a little blue book. I thought it might be a pocket New Testament. So I got the chief's attention and pointed at the book. And he said to me in English, it changed my life. I said, well, it changed my life too. That's why I'm here. We have come on this campus to bring the good news about Jesus. And he said, listen, anything I can do to help, you let me know. You are my friend if you have come to bring Jesus. You are free to go, he said. Hallelujah. Yes, Congo. We desperately need some people in the Congo. Rwanda, we have two ladies at the National University. One is a Kenyan, the other is Rwandan, who are doing ministry. We need two men and two ladies to work on that campus. It is alive and well. Interestingly enough, in the Congo, the university campuses are changing from French to English. So when students come, if they don't speak English, that's what they do the first year, is learn. I get my country straight here. In Rwanda, for the first year, if you don't speak English, that's what you do. You study English. And that gives them good entree. I've been in several studies with missionaries when they were teaching English and was able just to share the gospel. You know, I was a visitor. They didn't like me. I was gone. You know, it was okay. But they were open to Rwanda. It's interesting that a group of students I spoke to in the morning, when they saw me on the campus in the afternoon at the National University campus, they came over and wanted to talk some more, open to the gospel. Same in Burundi. We have a young man, a Burundi kid, who has come to visit us in the Kuru for training at Edgerton University, where we work on the campus, about 20 minutes from our home. Tanzania, same thing. We have several missionary couples there, but it's not enough. Students are open. The only unusual thing that you have about Dar es Salaam University, that's the main university in Tanzania, is that there are many Muslims there. You will find the ladies with the buibuis, that means the little coverings. Now, they have become more militant in recent days. They used to have just kind of the loose buibui, and now they have the baka, you know, with just the little peepos, so you see nothing but their eyes. But it is amazing. If you will relate to them, love them, they will be open to the gospel. So I would say that for the most part, not 100%, but for the most part in East Africa, even Muslims are open. And then in Uganda, we need a couple to go to Makerere University in Kampala, the capital city. Kampala has about, 3, 4, 5 million people. It's a big city. Great university. Students are alive. 25,000 students on campus. Hungry to hear about Jesus. Now, let us tell you a bit about our campus. And I think this is probably true on whatever campus you work on in East Africa. After they have seen you around, you'll be surprised. I remember the first time I came out of the door after sharing the gospel with quite a few people, and I had a couple of Kenyan interns with me, and we were walking out, and this student came over to me and said, "Mr. Stickney, I'm Michael, and I was wondering if you would come to my room and talk to me about Jesus." I thought, is this a joke? Is he pulling my leg? I mean, after these 30 years, we've always had young people who were open to the gospel. But I have never had anyone come to me and ask me to come to their room and talk to them about Jesus. Now it happens all the time. I have to say, I can't be everywhere. So I say, no, I'm not going to come. But Michael is, or John is, or Festus. Or Big Victor, or Little Victor. We've got a number of Kenyan interns these days, and man, I put them to the task. What a blessing. Same for Alice. Come and tell them about the girls.
Well, the girls are just so wonderful. As I'm standing here, I'm thinking about Grace and Lucy and Janice and Noreen and Prisca and Carol and Faith, and I could just go on and on and on. They just love you so much for coming to help them. They're just, the African people, are very friendly. They love Americans because we're joking, and you know, we like to have fun, and
right,
they're used to the British because Kenya and Uganda were British colonies, and so they're used to the British stiffness, you know, and aloofness and that kind of thing. So they really like Americans, and they just love us, and you know, we're about the age where most missionaries are coming home from the field. And so we're staying. As a matter of fact, we just have been back there this time for about a year and a half now. And we're scheduled to be there for another 3 or 4 years. They love you, and they want you to come to their rooms, and they want you to eat with them, and have tea with them, and we do things with them. It's just like ministry here, actually.
We have them in our home.
They come to our home, yes. Our home is a basic, foundational place of ministry. I can't tell you how many birthday cakes I've made and how many meals, and just before we came home this time, we had on the Saturday before we came, we had about 70 young people in our home. We live in the town of Nakuru. The university is in Njoro, which is about 20 minutes away. But we bring them in on Saturdays to have teaching times and fun times. We take them on trips to different places. I just can't tell you what a blessing it is for us to work with students in East Africa. And I would encourage you, if you have any interest there, we just need people so badly to help us. We had a group from OU that came summer before last.
2002.
And a group scheduled to come this past summer, but because we had a little problem with, you know, the terrorist situation, they had to cancel because some parents were not real comfortable with them going. But thank goodness.
Let me interrupt there. Okay. You know, if this happens again, if some of you agree to come to East Africa and to do ministry short term, you know, May, June, or whenever, or even long term, and there are going to be terrorist alerts for who knows how long, how many years this is going to happen. So you need to go and talk to Mama and Papa beforehand and say, if just because a terrorist alert comes along does not mean I am not going to Kenya or to Tanzania or to Uganda.
Because after all, we are under one right here now, aren't we? Color orange or whatever.
I want your mama to be happy. But perhaps you need to pray and ask the Lord to give you wisdom about dealing with your parents. These are difficult days. These are challenging days. Yes, I mean, I will not disagree. I've had some scary experiences myself. However, God is faithful and will protect us and use us. You know, he calls himself Rick, doesn't he? Yeah, Rick.
Nick.
Nick, sorry.
Nick.
Yes. Nick, has had some harrowing experiences himself. You know that's not his real name.
Yeah. He told us it this morning. He messed up.
Oh, he did.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a matter of life. You know, Alice and I have discovered the year and a half we've been back this time that persecution is really not a part of our life. Just a little bit. But let me tell you, the young men and women that we're investing our lives in and who have a vision for making disciples in their country and in other countries and around the world, they will be persecuted. You can count on it. So if you come and work with us at Edgerton or at Moi University about 80 miles north of us, or at the University of Nairobi, and you invest in some ladies or men, I'm telling you, you may very well be investing with people who 15 years from now will be persecuted, martyred, because of their faith. Yeah, they live in that kind of a world. To some of you, you folks, you know John Wood? John Wood left us two fellows, Michael and Eric, but or something else. Both of those young guys mean business for God. And they, for sure, are going to get themselves in trouble. They will not shut up about Jesus. Going to get you in trouble. Now, you and I will be fine. But
Every once in a while we get an update from the American Embassy in Nairobi that says, so we're in Nakuru is a small town, Nairobi is the major city in Kenya, and then Mombasa is the coastal city. Those are the two largest cities. And so we'll get an update saying, you know, just kind of be cool this weekend. They're going to have a little demonstration in Mombasa or Nairobi. But we don't worry about things like that in Nakuru because we just are a small town and, you know, don't have that problem. But the young people in Kenya are so open. The field is white into harvest. And we just are begging and praying for laborers. So we just want to, you know, lay that on your heart to pray about and to think about.
Yeah, let me tell one more story, and then I'll give you a chance to ask some questions. Maybe you have some questions about any one of those places. I had an Aggie and his wife, Travis and Charity Jones, are now the new directors at the University of Dar es Salaam, Baptist Student Ministry Directors. Well, Travis came to spend some time with me for a little bit of training and seeing what we do. And then we had Desiree from Burundi, who also came for training. And then I took two young interns with me to share the gospel. We knock on the door. That's not how we knock. If they heard me knocking like that, they'd be coming to the door saying, "Must you knock like the police?" What you do in Kenya is you go and open the door.
And say, "Hodi."
Hodi. Hodi. You know, open the door. So that's what I did. I just kind of tapped, "Hodi, abadi gani?" And I chatted with them a little bit in Swahili. They like to make fun in Swahili. Say, "Hey guys, I want you to meet these guys, and I'm Rana Stickney, and we've come to talk to you about Jesus. Is that okay, guys?" Yeah, and I noticed that one character at the back there was not that excited about it. But they all agreed in the room, and so I began to share the gospel. And I dealt with, there was Otieno, and there was Gabriel, and I've forgotten this kid's name on the left, but behind all that, there was a kid, and I said, "Hey man, what is your name?" "Juma." Juma was reading the newspaper and yawning. He was not overly excited about what I was doing. And a couple of other fellows came in the room, and I began to share the gospel with them. You know, it's training time. I'm trying to let folks, for these new interns, I want them to learn from me and a couple more times, and then they're going to do it. And I'm going to harass them fiercely about whether they've memorized their verses and if they know what they're doing. Well, in this room, I'm the one showing them how to do it, and I present the gospel, and I begin to deal with each guy. "Did you understand about that? What I said about what a man must do to accept Jesus?" "Yes." I asked Juma, Bangjuna, did you understand? Juna said nothing. These three fellows in the front, I could tell that the Holy Spirit was working in their lives. But when I asked them, are you ready to accept Christ? I also said to them, or do you need to think about it? Now you need to realize that these are Eastern people. These are not Western thinkers like you and me that make those kind of decisions. Now sometimes when they, I said to one of them, you know, are you ready to accept Christ? And he said, yes. I think that was Gabriel. I said, Gabriel, why don't you just think about it a while, pray about it. I'll come back and see you. Eric and Michael and I will come back and see you in a couple of days. You need to go back, and I've written it all out for them. You need to go back and examine the scripture, like Acts 17:11, to find out if what the Mzungu really said, what the Mzungu said was really true. By the way, that's you, Mzungu. You know, Wazungu, that's the plural. But a Mzungu is a European or an American, a white guy. It comes from the root word Zunguka, which means people who go in circles. So I'm talking to them, and I asked Juma, you ready to accept? No. He didn't say anything. So after it was over, by the way, the easiest thing in Africa is to get in the room. The most difficult thing is to get out of the room. Because when you come to see them, they believe that your visit is of God. You're a gift from God. So they, whatever they have is yours. They're wanting to serve me chai, you know, tea, or whatever they're cooking. Well, at the end, finally, I got the fellows, the two interns and our two visitors, Travis Jones from Texas A&M and Desiree. It's time to get out of there. I finally get them out, and I see Juma and Desiree talking. And afterwards, we're walking off, and Desiree came to me and said, Buana, you said, did you know that Juma is a Muslim? I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, you know, he did not want to listen at first, Buana. I said, yeah, I noticed, yes. He was not very excited about it. He said, but I also noticed that every once in a while, Juma would pay attention. He said, Buana, he said, when he began to hear you talk about Jesus, he said, there was a burning in his chest. And that to hear the story about Jesus made him so excited. You know, I've been in East Africa since 1971. And that's the first time that has ever happened to me. Muslims across East Africa are coming to know Jesus. And I'm afraid we missionaries are not prepared to deal with those Muslims. Our friend Nick didn't talk about well, he talked about that a little bit, about the fact that we need to deal with the Muslim fellows and ladies a bit better. Okay, enough for me. Do you have some questions that you'd like for Alice and me to answer for you?
Well, Alan, before we do that, why don't we just share a little bit about some individual people?
Okay.
Let me tell you the story about Prisca. Prisca is from a section of Kenya in the western area in the north, and they have a lot of really heathen customs, pagan things that they still participate in. But also, you know, in Kenya, even with some of these things in the background, they have taken in a lot of Western customs. and some of them are good, and some of them are not good. But Prisca, the biggest problem, and I'll just say this at the beginning, the biggest problem of ministry with students in East Africa is in the area of sexual immorality. That's the biggest problem. And that has come with westernization. Before, when they were in tribes and so forth, they had certain tribal customs and standards and rules that prevented some of this. But now that's all been, you know, put down a bit. And so they feel, you know, that they can just do whatever they want to. And they come from little villages and they come to the university and they're just green as they can be. And particularly the young women are very flattered when they are visited and invited to things by the young men because they haven't been doing that. And so it's very difficult for them, especially because still the old African culture says that to be worth anything as a woman, you have to be married and you have to have children. And so you can see how this works as it comes in to play on a university campus where they are now free to visit anybody's room at any time of the day or night. So this is the really big problem. Just before we left, we had a session with them on true love waits. I don't know if you've heard about that, but this is something we use a lot in Africa. And they were very responsive to that, but they just have a real problem in this area. But anyway, Prisca's mother had her out of wedlock. And then the mother just kind of dumped her off at her mother's place, at the grandmother's place, and went about her business in the big city. And so Prisca was running around in the farm area, and she didn't have a name. Because in their culture, the father has to name the child. And because either the mother didn't know who the father was, or he certainly didn't care anything about the child, she didn't have a name. For 3 years, this young woman did not have a name. So when her mother's sister, an aunt of hers, who was married, had a baby, and they were at the church, and they were naming the baby with the Anglican priest. Most people out there are from Anglican or Catholic background, if they're anything. And so they were naming this little one that was, I don't know, 6, 7 months old, and this little 3-year-old was running around and crying and saying, "Why can't I have a name?" Now, can you imagine that? Not having a name? We don't realize, you know, what names mean to us sometimes unless we stop and think about it. But she didn't have a name. And so the pastor of the church, he heard the commotion with this 3-year-old, and he went to the grandmother and he said, "You know, I think I'm hearing something, but what's going on?" And so the grandmother explained to him that this child didn't have a father and a mother at this point. The grandmother was taking care of her, and that she had not been named. And so this pastor was so wise, and he said, "Well, we're going to give this child a name right now." So her grandmother gave her the name of Prisca. And then because her mother later married, and had some children, and the husband was very kind and accepted Prisca into their home as his child, you know, so to speak. But his family, you see, she was not of his bloodline, so his family would not accept her. And she told me that some of her step-sisters and from her father's family had literally tried to kill her on 2 occasions. Because they didn't want her using up the father's money. See, they're from the bush. They don't have a lot of money. It's so wonderful when they can get to go to university. You have to be smart. You have to go to high school, pass the tests. But if you're smart enough and make good on those exams, then you get invited to go to one of the universities. So she was a smart young woman, and so she was at the university. And but she had been no name till she was 3, and her father's people had tried to kill her on two different occasions. She is the most on fire for the Lord young woman that I deal with. And we're hoping that she finishes university after a year, and we're hoping that she will come on staff with us and work for us, you know, there in doing student ministry at Edgerton. But that's just to give you a glimpse of one young woman that I work with. Her name is Prisca. And then, so Alan, you might tell about either Edward or Edwin or something, just to give them an idea of where our students come from.
You know, next July, we will have been married 40 years,
yeah.
And she's still giving me instruction. Yeah, well, let me tell you about a young man named Edward. I'd seen Edward on campus a number of occasions. Edward stayed drunk most of the time. Even during the day, we'd see him stumbling around. And one night, he and his buddy were in the student center and drunk, stumbling around, and they broke out a huge plate glass window, cut Edward over the eye, frightened him. And a couple of the fellows came to me and said, "Wanna come on, let's go and talk to him about Jesus, and maybe we can help him." So really, the Kenyans managed all that. Edward thinks I'm the one that did it. I didn't do it. The Kenyan fellows are the ones who really took him under their wing and encouraged him. He came to know Jesus, and now he's an intern. Unbelievable. To see the life, to see the heart that he has for others. You know, because of the desperate background that he had, he has a sensitivity and a caring spirit for the bad guys on campus. We don't have many. We got a few bad guys. He's got a real heart for those guys. He'll come to me and say, "Hey, Buona Stippi, let me introduce you to that guy." And I'm thinking, not that guy. You know, it's because Edward has such a heart for those kind of folks. Okay. Now a chance for you to ask us some questions. Maybe we have not touched on the things you want to know. Feel free to ask us.
Reading about some missionaries that have gone to different places in the past, they had problems that people, the nationals, just wanted to be around them just because they were American or something, or, you know, or British or whatever. I mean, do you find that that's a problem with short-term people, that they'll make friends really fast because they're Americans, but after they leave, that people they made friends with...
Yeah, you've asked a great question. Yeah, there's some of that, yes. That means you need to be discerning. The guys who run at you, you need to be wise and ask God for wisdom and direction about who God wants you to invest in. But really the way we try to do it is door by door. You know, we'll teach you how to share the gospel, put a Kenyan with you, or you can go with me. We'll be not, and the new believers become your guys. That's how we, instead of it some guy coming up and being your buddy because of what he might can get out of you. One of the things you need to learn if you come to an East African country is, ladies, do you know how to pronounce this word? M-O? You know how? Can I hear you ladies say that word? Well, this one does not know how to. Alice has such a heart for people. Loves people so much, she has a hard time saying no. You gotta learn to say no. Needs are everywhere. People are hurting, people are everywhere. So you got to be wise. Good question. Did I answer it for you? Just discernment and some help from old turkeys like me that, you know, I can usually spot them when they're trying to be, you know, the felonious balonious. I can pick it out pretty quick. Another question. Yes.
Do you
Yes, ma'am.
Can you repeat the questions for the report?
Yes, take the questions so that you can be able to.
Okay, how about I start with this one? Yes, ma'am.
For just short term, like summer mission trip, would a typical day be like?
Or is it really a typical day for short term volunteer in Kenya? One thing we would get you to do is spend at least a couple of hours every morning with God. And when you come, if you come to work with us, the first two or three days, we don't take you on campus. Those are days of prayer. You need to be ready spiritually, emotionally. You're going to smell some new things, and but some of them will be very unpleasant. There will be some sights that will not be very attractive, and sounds, situations. So we want you to be spiritually prepared. We normally, after a couple of hours, then we'll bring you in for some training. Make sure you know what you're doing in regard to your own personal walk with God. We'll want to know what you do. We'll teach you how to share the gospel. Maybe you already know how to share the gospel. We'll teach you a new method because it's a method that is pass-onable. You know, what we want to do is teach you how to do that so when you help this person grow up, they learn the method that you used. We'll do a lot of training. We'll teach you how to help them have a testimony. How to do follow-up, how to do some man-to-man. Try to teach you some key things during our time together, some key things in regard to how to relate with the ladies. Now, I tell you what, one of the things would be like this. I don't deal with ladies. Ladies come to me often and say, Brother Stickney, could you help me? And I'm saying, Alice? Where's Alice? You know, I'm going to give her to my wife. Now, we do lots of training, and then about we'll have lunch together, and then we try to be on campus about 4:00. And the Oklahoma bunch, we were usually on campus at 4:00, and we would come in at night, 10:30, 11:30. If it breathes, we want you to talk to it about Jesus. Really, you know, except of your own gender. So that's pretty. And then after you've done evangelism for a time and you've got about this many new believers, what in the world are you going to do with them? We'll begin to help you know about how to help them in follow-up, putting their roots down deep in Jesus, helping them memorize some verses, helping them learn how to have a quiet time, investing in them. Does that help you?
But at the same time, we fund things too.
Don't count on it. You know, my wife was gone when the Oklahoma bunch came, and they came for 6 weeks, and for one solid month, we worked. And finally, someone came to me and said, Alan, have you taken them down to the Nakuru Game Park? You know, it's right down at the bottom. The Nakuru is known in the world because of Lake Nakuru and the fact that the largest concentration of flamingos in the world is on Lake Nakuru. Well, I had not taken these guys there. It's also the place where the remaining rhinos are kept in this park. Oh, no. They asked me, have you taken the students to the, you know, to at least down to the Nakuru Park? No. See, I have. So it was good that somebody kicked me in the pants about fun stuff. Alice is good for that, you know. She'll remind me. elbow me about doing that.
Well, and tell them about taking them to the game
hall. Do I have to? What do you want me to tell them about taking them to the game?
Give them the deal about the giraffe.
That's enough about the game part. Moving right along, is there another question? Yes, ma'am.
What are our conditions going to be like? Are we going to have a mailing address? Or do we stay in one spot? Or are there hospitals around?
Which one of those you want me to answer? The place where you would stay is nice. The ladies from Oklahoma would tell you that their accommodations were more than they expected. Right now we have all of the interns living in the dorms on the campus. We have not yet tried that with volunteers. That may be a little rough. Your accommodations would be good. Tell me the other questions now.
Hospital.
You want to stay as far away as possible. Yes. I mean, it's a good place to get sick.
Now, let me come in here to say we have wonderful medical facilities in Nairobi. We are 2 hours from Nairobi. In Nakuru, we have several small hospitals, but he's right. You know, we except in an emergency, we would take, you know, you would go to Nairobi if you had a major problem. But we do have wonderful medical facilities in Nairobi. I know because I've been in the hospital twice. And you need to say no to sometimes to food and drink, because that's why I was in the hospital. I got amoeba, stomach deal, you know, from drinking water that was not filtered or boiled properly.
But so she's talking about...